Hello everyone, my name is João and I'm your host at Software Crafts Podcast. Today with us we have Manuel Paes. Manuel Paes is co-author of Team Topologies, organizing business and technology teams for fast flow. Recognized by TechBeacon as a DevOps thought leader, Manuel is an independent IT organizational consultant and trainer, focused on team interactions, delivery practices, and accelerating flow. Manuel is also a LinkedIn instructor on accelerating continuous delivery in the enterprise. Hi, Manuel, and thanks for your time to be with us today.
Hi, João. Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
So let's jump to the heuristic today. It's a very short one, but I think that devil is on details. And the heuristic is internal evangelism. What is your opinion about this?
So I would say the two aspects around that. So one is you can think about it as kind of an explicit approach where you might have a team or some people inside the organization in that role of internal evangelists, where they might be trying to expand some good practices or some approaches across the organization, typically for large organizations. And that can make sense. Of course, you need to kind of judge if the organization has a size that kind of makes sense to have these people allocated 100% to that. But I also feel like there are different types of teams that need to do a bit of evangelizing, or at least we could categorize some of the work that we would expect them to do within that classification of evangelization.
Okay, cool. So we have these two views, and some questions pop up in my head. So you talk about some large organizations, and also a bit of your work and Matthew work is around Dunbar's number and cognitive load and how teams can be organized for fast flow. I believe that we get that. How large an organization needs to be to have dedicated evangelists? Some heuristics that you might have.
Well, I don't have specific number, but there's a very good example I find from IBM around 2013, 14, something like that, where, you know, DevOps started in around 2009. And so we were starting to see kind of early adopters of DevOps and some of the tooling being adopted by large organizations. And so IBM actually had an internal team of, you know, what you could call DevOps evangelists. And so what these people were doing was not telling teams, you know, how to use DevOps, but they were bringing knowledge and what are the practices around DevOps that might be useful for different teams across the world. Obviously, IBM is a huge organization, and so it made sense for them to have this team that would essentially be traveling and talking to different teams around the world. Obviously, most organizations are not IBM or not the size of IBM. There is one characteristic different from size that is important, I think, which when you have, and of course, today we see more and more companies that are distributed, right? They have teams across the globe, even if they're not necessarily big, but they rely on people working remotely. And so if you have teams kind of distributed around the world, then probably you should be thinking about not necessarily internal evangelists, but some mechanisms in which good practices are shared across these teams, right, that are not even in the same office. And so you can have things like communities of practice or guilds in the Spotify sort of terminology, which can be useful as well. But you also need to understand that the sort of knowledge sharing that tends to happen with communities of practice is more diffuse, right? It's more kind of informal networks. And for some kinds of practices and knowledge areas, you want to be more intentional and make sure that we provide most of our teams, or all of our teams, with access to this knowledge and this practices. And so we talk about in the book team topologies, we talk about enabling teams, for example, where effectively they are kind of curators of practices and good approaches within a certain domain. So that can be really anything, can be continuous delivery or SRE or DevOps, or can be more product focused, whatever is some meaningful domain for the company, where we say, well, actually, we need to kind of spread good practices, improve the maturity of different teams in this domain. And so effectively, those enabling teams, I see them as kind of evangelists, but also not just kind of pushing knowledge, if you like, but also pulling, in the sense of they should also expect to learn from the teams they interact with. Because there might be really good practices that, you know, one team or a few teams in the organization are doing, which would be useful for other teams that haven't thought of that before. And so these enabling teams, yes, they should be kind of partially be evangelists and bring knowledge to other teams, but also learn and kind of curate this useful internal practices and then bring that to the rest of the organization.
Very interesting thoughts. Thanks. You touch on lots of subjects that I hope that we can expand. So you talk about these enabling teams and you talk about push and pull. I really like the way that you phrase that, right? The knowledge needs to flow on both directions. Do you see or do you have experience this behavior? And if yes, what were the structures in place to allow the push and to allow the pull?
So we have one case study in the book Team Topologies, which is actually quite interesting in the sense that this is a project that ThoughtWorks was involved with one of the clients. And I would say in general, most organizations are not realizing the need for enabling teams. Very often, they still rely quite a lot on, well, we have some gap and, you know, let's hire someone to bring this knowledge that we have a gap, or, you know, let's move people across teams. Or they rely on some sort of working group that meets and decides on some aspects on a regular basis. We don't see very often the kind of intentional understanding that this enabling teams should actually exist and have, and we can have a team whose purpose is to kind of share this knowledge and effectively, like we were saying, not just push knowledge and say, well, do this and do that, because that tends to become a sort of ivory tower approach. But actually understanding, you know, that we have different teams, they have different maturity, they have different practices, so we need to meet them where they are, right? We need to understand where are they. Inside the same organization, we can have teams with very different maturity on the same domain. And so we need to, as enabling team, first understand where these different teams are, what are the things that are going to help them now. You know, to give you an example with, let's say, continuous delivery, which is that case study we have in the book from ThoughtWorks around continuous delivery as well. You know, teams that have never been really exposed to good continuous delivery approaches, might need help even to understand what is, you know, start with continuous integration, start with, you know, some starting to automate some tests, some unit tests, and so on. You might have other teams that are much more evolved in that domain, which might need help with much more kind of advanced topics, if you like, within continuous delivery. Maybe they need help because they have a lot of flaky tests, or they have a very large test suites that need to be reduced so they can have faster feedback. And so these enabling teams should be, like I said, meeting these teams at the point of maturity that they have now and helping them step by step. It's not about coming in and saying, well, do all this 30 or 50 practices and then, you know, you're in the right place. No, it's about understanding how we're going to help them evolve, how we're going to help them get through, you know, the current hurdles. And so that example, that case study in the book, Team Topologies, from ThoughtWorks is interesting because this is actually, they created an enabling team around continuous delivery to help the client. And this team was a mix of internal and external people. And so they had people from the application teams and they had consultants from ThoughtWorks that brought all the kind of continuous delivery knowledge. And they, because this was, you know, a project, it had a kind of expiration date. So they purposely said, well, we have this specific things we want to improve in terms of deployment frequency, quality of the changes that we deliver, and a number of other aspects that they wanted to improve. And so they set up a temporary enabling team to do that. And that worked quite well for them and for that client.
It's very, very interesting, especially in the beginning. You trigger me just traveled to the past to a few weeks ago. I was in a training with Jabe Bloom and Ben Mosier, and Jabe just said that enablement teams to lower the cost of change. I still have the sentence right next to me, and I think that this is the leadership don't understand this concept. They see this as a cost. I need to pay more salaries. Why people shouldn't be producing my application code, where they are just there as advisors, and they don't think about the total cost of ownership of their product. This was very, very interesting, and you triggered me with this thought.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I like how he put it. And it's also, from my point of view, it's also about enabling this idea of fast flow, of having teams that are more autonomous, right? So we're trying to help the teams. So the enabling teams are trying to help the what we call streamlined teams. But, you know, for people who maybe are not familiar with team topologies, let's say application teams in general, software delivery teams, we should be helping them reduce the learning curve, as you said, and helping them be able to deliver faster, but with the right amount of knowledge, right? And there's often a confusion, I think, in organizations where they talk about enablement in the sense of, well, let's have this other team do this part of the work. But that often creates more dependencies between teams, and more dependencies reduce flow typically. And so it's not about saying, let's move this piece out of your responsibility as a software delivery team and move it to another team. That's not the point, because that introduces dependencies. It's about helping that software delivery team gain the knowledge that they need as quickly as possible in kind of consumable pieces. And so it's different, like I said, from the ivory tower approach, where you have people who are experts just telling others what they should be doing. And it's also slightly different from just having kind of diffuse learning approaches like communities of practice or guilds, because that is helpful, but we're not necessarily addressing the gaps of the that our specific teams have today. And so that's why we think enabling teams are quite important. We start to see some organizations creating that, but we still see even clients that are have understood the idea of team topologies, but they don't tend to think about enabling teams as much as we think they should. And often they tend to want to have what we call platform teams, right? Teams that provide services for others to consume around, let's say, monitoring, infrastructure provisioning, a lot of things that we know that our teams need. But in fact, having enabling teams might be make more sense before we try to build and enlarge the platform. Let's have enabling teams that kind of act as sensing mechanisms. As they try to help the software delivery teams to improve their knowledge, they'll also be able to detect, well, actually, it would be really good if we have some sort of service to create dynamic test environments, or it would be really good if we had some sort of service in the platform to provide dashboards for service level indicators or service level objectives. Or other things can be, you know, more specific things. But the enabling teams are also in that good position where they can detect what are the gaps that actually need to be, should be addressed by a platform. Instead, we see organizations that try to jump over the enabling and go straight to the platform. And then they start to go into the direction where they're creating roadmaps for the platform, but we haven't actually understood what the what are the needs of the software delivery teams.
Yeah, very interesting, and thanks for sharing these patterns and anti-patterns and behaviors that you are seeing based on your work. And I also started to see this from a personal point of view or a career point of view. So in your example of ThoughtWorks, and the customer, the case study that is in the book, the enablement team was a 50-50, 50% externals, 50% internals. And now also you were giving the example of platform teams and enablement teams and different patterns and anti-patterns. And in my head also pop up the dynamic reteaming concept from Heidi. Be part of an enablement team should be like a stable job, I'm here for the next years, or companies should build mechanisms that allow people to join and leave enablement teams. What is the your opinion on this?
So there are a few different factors that can influence that. On one hand, as you say, if an enabling team, and we understand that kind of stable teams are helpful to, because of the, you know, the team, people inside the team need to have the time to know each other well, and, you know, this sort of team formation aspects. But there are some circumstances where we might say, well, actually, it doesn't make sense to keep this team longer than this period of time. So the ThoughtWorks example is pretty clear because these are external people. You cannot keep them working for you forever. There are some factors where perhaps small organizations might not have kind of enough people to actually have a dedicated ongoing enabling team or multiple. And so we might need to be a bit pragmatic there and say, well, we know that we need help with, let's say, monitoring for a period of time. We need to upskill different teams. And so do we have a few experts around monitoring that could maybe take a kind of temporary role inside enabling team for a few months or whatever we think is going to be needed, so that, you know, they can help lift up many teams during this period, and then they can go back to their original teams. So that might be a pattern, a kind of pragmatic pattern. The other aspect is, what is the domain of the enabling team? So there are some domains like continuous delivery, for example, where I would expect that, first of all, it's a domain that keeps evolving, right? And it's quite a large domain. So I would expect that it would make sense to have an enabling team for a long period of time. As I was saying before, some teams might need help with some things, other teams need help with other things, even though everything's within continuous delivery. There might be other more specific domains. For example, if you think about GDPR, the European data privacy regulations that came into effect a few years ago, some companies did something quite interesting, which was instead of having a sort of task force that was implementing or making the changes for GDPR, they said, actually, let's have a sort of enabling team of, you know, data experts and kind of legal experts as well, that can help our software teams understand what are the things they need to be careful with, what are the things they need to do to comply with GDPR. And so they were bringing that knowledge. And this was, of course, a temporary team, right? Because, you know, GDPR had a specific date when it was starting to be applicable. So it depends a bit. It depends on the availability of people that you have and experts in that domain. It depends on what is the domain itself. Is it we expect there is ongoing need or we expect something that is kind of temporary? And also, are there external people involved or is this we can do this internally?
Yeah, very interesting examples that you bring. And GDPR tends to be a messy one. All the examples at all levels. And if I may, and I go a little bit back, I just love as you frame the enablement teams and how they interact with platform teams as sense making type of style across the organization for larger organizations. What are the skills in this specific use case that people inside of an enablement team should have to be these sensors?
That's a very good question. So, and that is partially explains, I think, as well, why we don't see more enabling teams. The type of people that you or the kind of some characteristics that you'd expect from people in the enabling team is to have this understanding of what it is to be kind of in a mentoring role, in a kind of more teaching role, right? And so for domains that are very technical, and this relates a bit to what you're saying before, the culture is usually, well, we pay, you know, these technical people a lot of money, why can't they do more work faster? And now we're saying, well, we should have some of our experts become sort of teachers and enablers, and not actually doing the work as much, but actually teaching and helping others to learn. And so this becomes very unfamiliar to both managers and also the people themselves in these teams. And so we need to look for people who maybe are not the best communicators yet, but that they have the interest in improving their communication skills, understanding, you know, there's also kind of a learning path for them on how do we become better at mentoring, at transmitting information, at writing some useful documentation, if that's the case, or creating workshops that have, you know, are easy to follow and help people understand the ideas that we're trying to communicate. So there is that aspect of you need not just the people with expertise, people who at least are willing to improve their communication and mentoring skills.
Cool. I can see definitely some of these skills, and for some of us that had formal education, this is not the type of skills that we get on a computer science degree.
Yeah.
But things that we can pick up as we go. And you were talking also about the managers. So you deal with lots of managers. There are lots of good examples inside of the book, how managers pick up all of these concepts from team topologies and change the workplace, even the layout of the floor plans. Yeah. But do you think that also we have managers capable to enable the teams and people and their organizations, or we still have some managers that need to grasp the concepts of cognitive load and concepts of flow for their daily jobs?
Yeah, I think we still see a lot of managers kind of focusing on the teams individually, if you like. You might have, you know, an engineering manager that's responsible for a few different teams, and they tend to still focus on, you know, how do we improve each, how do we help each team improve. But if we're moving to the notion of more autonomous teams, that because we want to promote faster flow, we want teams to be able to really own the end-to-end life cycle of their services, including making choices around what kind of functionality we're going to develop, what kind of experiments we're going to run with our service to, and see if we you know, provide more value to customers. If we want this sort of teams with end-to-end ownership, we should expect that the engineering or the manager's role becomes more around how, you know, if these teams can be more autonomous, what do we need to do kind of cross teams, right? What are the sort of boundary spanning activities that we need to be looking at as managers? And so we think this is something that is going to naturally become more, you know, more frequent. We have created an on-demand course together with the PMI Institute for, you know, team topologies for managers, effectively, you know, focusing on that, on moving away from trying to manage the teams and actually promote more autonomy in the teams and look at the cross-team aspects. Look at, you know, we were talking about enabling teams, identifying when do we need a new enabling team, or what are some of the areas that it looks like several teams need help with? Can we get the help from one of the enabling teams that we have today? Or, you know, or we see that we see more and more dependencies between teams. We need to do something about that. Maybe we need to rethink how our services are split. So all these sort of aspects that are not specific to one team, but when you look at the interactions between them.
Very, very interesting. Thanks to share some heuristics, right? This is also a podcast about heuristics, and you share a few heuristics now, how a manager can look to the ecosystem. Please engage with us. You can check the Twitter handler and also share your heuristics with us. Perhaps there is more to discover. But we are getting to the end of this episode. So my last question, everyone knows, my last question is about what are the resources that you recommend for our audience to continue this journey on enablement teams, to understand this concept of supporting the organization.
Yeah, so you know, we talk about enabling teams in our book, Team Topologies, organizing business and technology teams for fast flow. So that's the book came out on IT Revolution. There you have some of these case studies that we talked about in the book. There's also something I wanted to mention briefly, is that not just enabling teams, but I think every team should think a little bit about what kind of evangelizing they need to do. it's good to share when we're doing valuable work. For example, platform teams, we want to build things that help our internal teams, but we should be also promoting that a little bit, promoting the value that we're providing. And teams that are working on customer-facing services should also internally be kind of promoting their successes and learnings and challenges that they've faced. So even though we focus a lot on enabling teams as kind of their core focus on evangelism and helping other teams, but I think every team should do a little bit of evangelizing, and platform teams should also, I think, dedicate a bit of their time to showcase to others, you know, what is the value provide? What, you know, how is this helping our internal teams? And so on the platform side, there are also some interesting case studies, for example, from USwitch. That's a case study we have on our website. It's not in the book. And there are other examples that are quite interesting, for example, from HelloFresh. Their platform team does a lot of internal kind of branding and promoting the value of the services that that platform team provides. And there are other quite interesting ones, like teams that even create their own kind of logo and their own name and create their own kind of website that promotes the value that they're giving to others. So I think all of those can be good references.
Cool, thanks, and thanks to elaborate a bit more after the enablement teams. To be honest, I just skipped one question in the beginning when we were talking about the different types of teams. Of course, there are more to that, but I can imagine that, yeah, we need another episode to deep dive on that topic.
Yes.
But thanks for all of these resources. I will make sure that these resources are on the description of this episode so the audience can follow up that. Also, your social media is there, so the audience can directly engage with you.
Sure.
And I want to thank you one more time for your time to be with us and to share your knowledge.
Thank you, João. It was fun.
Yes, indeed. You can follow us on Twitter at @scraftspodcast. Visit our website softwarecraftspodcast.com or follow our page on LinkedIn. See you next week.